You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The movie world of the 1940s and 50s is remembered as a glamorous time, but then as now, fame could have its drawbacks. In her debut novel called Laura Lamont's Life in Pictures, Emma Straub explores Hollywood's golden age through the eyes of a Wisconsin country girl who rises through the studio ranks to become a movie star, but can't hold on to her fame or her family forever. She was on our show this past September. We thought we would play that conversation for you again today. I began our conversation by asking, you're best known as a writer of short stories. Did this book begin as a short story idea?
It didn't. I'd been writing short stories in my MFA program in Madison, Wisconsin, and I knew I wanted to write something bigger and longer and more ambitious, and so this started. The idea came from this obituary that I read of the actress Jennifer Jones, and right away I knew that it was a novel.
Mm-hmm. Jen, you've said that you look to obituaries for material.
Not always.
because you find out things about people's lives that you might not find out by even reading the fan magazines.
Yeah, well,
or Page
certainly.
Six.
Yeah, certainly. What I like about obituaries is that they have a beginning, a middle, and an end. You know, which is hard to find.
Laura Lamont arrives in Hollywood as Elsa Emerson, and like many actors of the time, changes her name. It would have been hard for her to make it as Elsa Emerson. That's not a bad name.
Well, I know it's,
There were Elsas and there were Emersons,
yeah,
who were working in the movies at the time.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, and it's, you know, equally as alliterative. I don't know. I guess to me, Elsa Emerson sounds like a sweet, you know. Mm-hmm. Dairy farm girl, and Laura Lamont sounds like a movie star.
And Elsa Emerson is kind of sweet, not farm girl, but she's from farm country, blondest, mm-hmm, the blondest of her three sisters, and she does the opposite of what so many people do when they go to Hollywood. She becomes a brunette.
I know, it's very controversial.
And that's because it makes her look more exotic?
Well, I think that the idea was that it made her more serious, that Irving Green, who is the producer who, you know, dubs her Laura Lamont and eventually marries her, you know, that he saw her not as a comedian, not as even necessarily a romantic lead.
She's not a Carol Lombard type.
Right. That she's serious and somewhat somber. And I think that he felt being a brunette suited her better.
But this is largely also about somebody who's trying to balance life as both a real person and as a movie star. And she keeps on switching back and forth from her movie star identity as Laura to her non-glamorous mother identity as Elsa. At least she tries to do that. But it becomes harder and harder for her to do.
Yeah, it does. And I think that's probably true for all of us, that, you know, if we're really focused on our careers, then maybe, you know, other things sort of fall back a little bit. And, you know, it's a struggle. I think it's a struggle to do everything at once.
But isn't this also a problem for people in the public eye? They develop a public persona and then they have to live by it, even if it isn't who they really are.
Yeah. I think it's a problem for famous people of all stripes. You know, I mean, I certainly am not a famous person, but I do feel like I have, like on the internet, everyone loves to call me the nicest person on Twitter and things like that. And I am a very nice person, but I do feel like, oh, that's strange. That's strange that is now the story about me, when, of course, that is a very small part of who I am.
And you don't create nice people in your books and your stories?
Well, I mean,
some of them are.
Some of them are nice.
But in the case of Elsa, Laura, mm-hmm, I was reminded of the famous Rita Hayworth, mm-hmm, line, men fall in love with Gilda, but then they wake up with me.
Yeah, it's true.
And the men in Laura's life all know different versions of Elsa as Laura.
Yeah.
Even Laura's father.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, Laura's father, you know, was the first person who she really tried to please in that way. You know, when she was a child, acting on stage at her family's, you know, sort of country regional theater, that she, you know, she wanted to please him, and then she takes off.
Well, she wasn't the one the sister the family thought was going to go on to stardom. Right. It was Hildy, who then kills herself.
Yes. Spoiler alert.
Oh, well, it's in every review. I'm sorry.
It's quite all right. It happens in the first 30 pages.
I won't tell everything that happens in this book. But why would that send her off to Hollywood?
Well, I think that...
With Gordon, her first
with
husband.
With Gordon Pitts. I loved Gordon Pitts. He was one of my favorite characters because I just found him so repulsive. I think Hildy's death sends Laura, or Elsa at the time, sends Elsa off to California because she feels like she has to make it, that she's, you know, she's now really living her life for her sister who can't do it anymore.
But then Gordon, he's married Elsa and witnesses a transformation into Laura, and that drives them apart.
Yeah. Gordon couldn't handle a powerful, successful woman.
Irving Green is the one who discovered her, as you said, and he becomes her second husband at the point where she's just becoming a budding movie star. Is he surprised when he encounters parts of Elsa's life, the other parts of Elsa's life?
I don't think so. I mean, I loved Irving also for very different reasons than I loved Gordon Pitts, because I think Irving really does love Laura, and he loves Oliver, and he loves, you know, the parts of her that are still Elsa and the parts of her that are this movie star. So I think he more than anyone else really understands the sort of breadth of her and this whole scope of her personality.
My guest is Emma Straub, whose latest book is a novel, her first novel, called Laura Lamont's Life in Pictures. Why did you decide to write about someone who was a star in the 40s?
Well, I wanted...
You just want to make sure that nobody was going to ask if this was autobiographical.
Well, that, you know, that's part of it. That I, you know, it, with my short stories, they all were pretty close. And I wanted to get as far away from that as possible. So, yeah, I said, okay, if we head back a few decades, then no one will say, is this you?
And this also requires a lot of research. You have to look into the studio system, into what Hollywood was like at the time, what Wisconsin was like, what New York was like at the time. It's always a problem for writers when they do that much research. They fall in love with what they've come up with. And you definitely wanted to make this a human story rather than a story about all of that research. So,
yeah, it was tricky.
That's a matter of editing. I know your father's advice. Your father's Peter Straub, a famous writer. And you say that his advice to you is often to kill off your characters.
He wants me to kill everyone all the time. And when I was writing this, there are three chapters in a row, three sections of the book in which people die. And I was so proud of myself. And I called him and I said, Dad, you're just going to love this. I'm killing people left and right. And he said, Emma, be honest. You're not killing them. They're just dying.
And there's a difference. Well, he writes a different kind of fiction. Your work has been compared more to Laurie Moore's, and she was your teacher in Wisconsin?
Yes, she was my thesis advisor, and I loved every moment that I got to spend with her. I love Laurie to itty-bitty pieces.
Now, have you ever lived in Hollywood? Because this story takes place in New York, which is where you grew up, and in Wisconsin, where you went to school. Mm-hmm. But she spends most of her life in Los Angeles.
Yeah. Well, my brother lives in Los Angeles, and so I visited him there once a year at least, you know, for the last 15 years or so. And then last year when I was writing the book, I took a couple of research trips. And then last summer, my husband and I did a house swap with a writer in Los Angeles. And so we spent a month there, and I really got to soak it up, which was necessary.
Well, hasn't it changed a lot since the time of Laura Lamont?
It has.
Well, there are no studios anymore.
there are a few. There are a few. So, you know, Paramount.
No, but they don't have a lot. And the
Paramount certainly does, and Warner Brothers. And, yeah, there are a lot of lots still, you know, with the back lots, with the houses that are made of plaster and things like that. Yeah, I took tours on the little golf carts of all the little back lots, and I just loved it.
Because the world has changed a lot. Now we have Brooklyn filling in for Chicago on The Good Wife and filling in for Atlantic City on Boardwalk, whatever that show is called.
Boardwalk Empire, yeah.
So, and everybody shoots on location, but in the days of Laura Lamont, you shot New York, Chicago, Africa, South America, wherever, all on the back lot.
Yeah, yeah.
Laura and her best friend Ginger are both contracted to Gardner Brothers, but their careers go in completely different directions. What happens to Ginger's career?
Ginger is sort of loosely or not so loosely based on Lucille Ball, who I learned a lot about when I was in Los Angeles doing all this research. Lucy, if I can call her that, was amazing because she, you know, not only she started out in these movies similar to the one that I described, Kissing Cousins, which is sort of goofy and silly, but you know, she was a movie star, and then she started doing the television show that, you know, we all know her for. But after that, after she and Desi Arnaz got married, they had their own studio, which I didn't know before. And when they split up, she ran it. And I
called Desi Lou.
Desi Lou, yes. Right over the wall from Paramount. And I had no idea. And I loved the idea that Laura, who in many ways is sort of a prisoner of her own choices and doesn't have as much agency as she wants, is such close friends with a woman who really is powerful and who really does sort of take charge.
On the other hand, Laura has a more respectable career. She even wins an Oscar.
Yeah, she's very lucky.
What makes that film stand out from Laura's other work?
I think she was drawing on her own experiences. It was Laura's little method acting moment. Farewell, My Sister. It's the story of a nun whose twin sister dies, and she returns home and falls in love with her sister's fiance, but then turns back to God instead. It's very dramatic.
So this also gave you an opportunity to write your own movie script from the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
So you've written this novel,
mm-hmm.
and now you've written a second novel, just sold it to Rip.
Well, I'm still working on it, but yes.
And would it be something also set in the past?
No, it's set in contemporary Mallorca. I've decided that the only way to write novels is to decide where I would like to go to research them and plan things that way. So... Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the next book is about a family from New York who goes on a 2-week vacation to Mallorca.
Meanwhile, you also can be found at times at Book Court in Brooklyn.
Yeah, yeah.
On Court Street.
Yeah, I love to sell books.
And right now, some of the people who are working hardest to save the idea of a book in a hardcover, the sort that I'm holding in my hand right now, your book, are writers. Writers who are opening up bookshops and or working in bookshops.
Yeah.
Do you think that this is a dying business?
I don't. I mean, I'm an optimist. I would love to pull an Ann Patchett and open my own bookstore. You know, I really do get so much pleasure out of selling books and the tactile objects themselves.
Well, there was a New Yorker cartoon of somebody holding up a book in ancient times and saying, yeah, it's a good idea, but I don't think people will ever stop reading papyrus.
Yeah.
Emma Straub, her fiction and nonfiction have been published in Tin House, the Paris Review Daily, Time, Slate, the New York Times. She's a staff writer for Rookie. And she has a new book out, her first novel, called Laura Lamont's Life in Pictures. It's published by Riverhead. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Up next, Paul Tough explains why character, curiosity, and self-control are better predictors of future success than intelligence and test scores, and what that means for how we should approach education. You're listening to WNYC, WNYC.org. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter.